As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The economy is getting back underway, and with it, the world of pro sports. Stay ahead of the curve with the unparalleled tools of two world-class news desks covering developments across finance, economics, technology, and sports. Subscribe to Bloomberg.com, and if you are not already an Athletic subscriber, for a limited time, receive a complimentary subscription to The Athletic. Go to Bloomberg.com/subscribe to sign up today. All right, James, it is an in-person edition of the Leaf Report podcast. It's crazy. It's like September and we have tons to talk about.
I guess you're in my bubble now.
Yeah. Well, I've been in your bubble. Like, we have these extended circles. Is that what they're called?
Something like that, yeah.
But it's weird. Like, it's the off-season. I guess we always have a lot to talk about in the off-season, but it feels like now, given the scale of change we might see, there's even more to talk about.
Yeah, you know? I think so. I mean, last season the Leafs had lots of turnover, but it was kind of like lower level turnover. Mm-hmm. There wasn't, because of the Marner contract was going to take up a lot of their space. And there weren't a whole bunch of trades last year. I mean, obviously the Kadri trade was a big...
Zaitsev. But we knew that stuff was coming, right? Like Zaitsev,
Marlowe
we knew.
Yeah. I guess, you know, the draft last year, they were pretty active. This year it feels like it's going to be even more kind of seismic change that there are... You know, I've been hearing, I get messages from other teams around the league, and they're like, oh, I'm hearing the Leafs are doing this. I'm hearing the Leafs are shopping these guys. That's been happening a lot. I've been getting that, like, the last 10 days. I've been, and you look at some of the reporting I've had on our site the last few days. It's mostly, the Leafs don't like broadcasting a lot of this stuff, so it's mostly other teams are saying this is what they're doing. And for such a condensed period, I would say the last week and a half, there's been a lot of that.
Well, and I would say a lot of what you've put out there and have reported is what we have talked about that they should do. Like, we talked about the scales of change. Either you were going to take from that core, those four guys, or you were going to go to the next level and start looking at Anderson, start looking at Kapanen, start looking at Johnsson and Kerfoot. And those are all the guys that you've heard are out there. So maybe that's not surprising.
Yeah, so the full list is, I mean, Kapanen was at the top of the list. He was the most likely one to go, and he did last week, obviously. But then the next tier is Anderson, Kerfoot, Johnsson, Engvall. I think that's it. It was a group of four. And, like, there's some talk about Nylander, but the talk I hear about Nylander is that they're not going to get an offer anywhere close to what will make them decide to trade him.
It's still funny. He still feels... so undervalued.
Well, I was thinking about it, and I think part of it is that season he had, not this year, but the year before, hurt his value.
I think it goes deeper, though. Yeah. I think it's like the perception of who he is, who his dad is, what he looks like, how he plays, his attitude. Like,
yeah, Michael Nylander was not the most beloved player around the NHL, and, you know, he had kind of a somewhat questionable reputation. And I think Nylander is just going to have to keep proving people wrong. You and I know how good he is because we see him every game, and the fans listening know how good he is. I don't think other teams know quite his talent level. Like, he can be like a $9 or $10 million player. He can be one of the best offensive players in the NHL, especially playing with a good center. And it just sounds like other teams around the league don't value him to the level that they should. So why, if you're the Leafs, why would you trade him? Why would you trade him at a for unless there was like the, like you can't just trade Nylander for cap space. It makes no sense. You have to. There has to be another team that, that likes him that's willing to give you something good.
Yes. As you know, like I started writing a story about whether they should trade him, and I haven't finished it because it doesn't feel like it's the kind of thing that's going to happen. But I also, as someone like you and I, like you mentioned, we've both been at the front or right near the front of the bandwagon that this guy is actually really good, even through the contract stuff. But I do get some of the apparent drawbacks that would cause some teams to look at him and be like, eh. Because you can look at that playoff. Granted, it's five games. It's after a five-month layoff. But that stuff is still there where, like, you still wonder which Nylander you're going to get night after night. The consistency and engagement is real. If I was the Leafs, it would concern me a little bit because it's not a one-time thing. It's kind of been there throughout career. It's gotten better this year.
They've been
year.
With Nylander from the beginning too, right?
Yes.
Like, Keith had him with the Marlies. And, like, they know him really, really well. And they wouldn't have given him that contract, and they wouldn't have stood by him, and they wouldn't have told him he wasn't going to get traded in the immediate aftermath of that.
Wait, no. Don't buy into that. That's not... Go back and read the quotes as I did. That's not what they said. They said they were not trading him. Nylander is on the record saying, Kyle told me he would not trade me as long as he was in charge.
I know.
So and then, the perceptions out there now that that's changed is not... Doesn't feel tied to reality.
People don't know. Elliot Friedman had in one of his columns that there was never a guarantee made to Nylander that he would never get traded. So
that does not feel accurate.
It's interesting that that comes out right now.
Yes. That doesn't feel like an accident that that comes out. That suggests
my spidey sense was like, okay, it's like almost like they're setting the table that something might happen. And I think we should say, I don't think it's impossible that Nylander gets traded. I think it's really unlikely.
Well, because like the only way that you should trade him, like all that stuff you're saying is like they believed in his potential and they believe in all that
stuff.
They
still believe in his potential.
They still believe in that. Yeah. But you're getting to a point where you're going to have to do something and that stuff with him is still there. And you wonder if it's always going to be there. If like he's just always going to be leaving you wanting a little bit more. And granted, like I had Dom kind of send me the projections. He's underpaid. Like he is underpaid right now. He's going to be underpaid as time goes on. But that stuff matters when there's a cap. So I think the only way you trade him is if you get that like perfect piece on defense who's like, I don't know. Like there's a few names that would make me think about it. Like Ekblad would make me think about it. Think about it. Doesn't mean I do it. I think about it. But there's not a lot.
Yeah, I think you need to get the player that your other assets can't get you. Right?
Yes.
Like that, yeah.
Yes.
So, and I don't know that they're going to be able to get that defenseman for him.
Well, and like so one of the things we're going to talk about in a bit is I've been going through and we're going to publish it next week. I've been going like across the entire league and looking at every team and defensemen they could trade for. One of the guys that comes up that looks really interesting and who we've talked about before is Colton Parayko. Now, the problem with Colton Parayko is he's only signed for two more years and then you're going to have to pay him. So in a hypothetical trade, not even considering the fact that the Blues probably don't want to trade Parayko, if you traded Parayko for Nylander straight up, you're getting 2 years of Parayko, then you got to pay him. Nylander's under contract for 4 years, under value. Like it's really tough to find a one-for-one trade that makes perfect sense. So,
yeah, but it's just been hard to find another team that wants to make that trade. You know, I think that teams know how valuable top four defensemen are, and especially right shots and like. I mean, look, I don't know. It's interesting. Like, look what Kapanen got on the trade market. And, like, I think what the Leafs are thinking of doing, the reason that they're looking at this, like, second-tier group of players they could potentially trade is they want to run back the core one more time.
Yep.
Like, this is not a full-out endorsement of the way this team is built and the top players forever, the way that it seemed like that was there. In the past, you know, I think that if they fall on their face again, I mean, for one, management's probably going to be in trouble, depending on what that falling on the face looks like. But two, there's going to be more substantial changes. So this could be the year where there's an overhaul that doesn't involve the core.
And I don't think it should. And I wrote about that on The Athletic.
Unless you think Anderson's part of the core. He kind of is.
No, he's like, I did adjacent? Tiers of the core, and he's like, he was second tier. Yeah. Like the tier one is like
second
those four
tier is
guys.
Where they're going to
That's where you look
push
at.
Guys out.
But I think the problem with breaking it up now is it really, you really haven't given it any runway. Like last year was the first year you had Tavares. And obviously the Kadri thing was part of what went wrong.
They were really close to beating Boston.
And they were really close to beating Boston, who ended up going to the final.
And this year was such a...
This year is such a cluster fuck. And then...
But the team didn't look good all
the
year.
The team did not look good. Like no, it's not an endorsement.
That's the
but,
reason there's going to be changes.
But like you've also... You have not seen a full year with Keefe, with right. with everything being... Well, even next year is not going to be normal. That's the thing. But you want to kind of give it like as long a runway as you possibly can before you go to that option. Because that option, once you trade someone like Nylander, you start searching for Nylander. You know what I mean?
You can, well, I was talking to someone today who's close to the team, and they were like, if you trade Nylander, who plays with Tavares? Like, who are his wingers, right? Like,
right, suddenly it's like Robertson and Mikheyev, which
right.
Robertson, we don't know what he is, and we don't really know what Mikheyev is. Like, suddenly you start to, I just think a lot about Edmonton, and it's not a perfect comparison, but after they traded Hall, it was suddenly like, oh man, we don't have enough scoring wingers. We're in trouble.
And they've been looking for wingers ever since. And McDavid's played with like every boot and tin can they can find that can skate. That I think they've got enough maneuverability if they move out. Like they moved out Kapanen, and they got about $3 million in space from that. I think they've got and if they move a Janssen and an Engvall and an Anderson, that's a lot of space.
A lot of change.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially when you, like, Lettinen's going to be coming in, Barabanov's going to be coming in, Barry and CC are going to be gone, Clifford's going to be gone. I can't see them bringing Clifford back.
I don't see the reason.
I don't think Goat's going to be back is my prediction.
I don't know why you wouldn't just bring him back for 700 grand.
Well, here's the thing, Jonas. I think they're going to be so close to the cap that they can't carry extra players. So I think the extra players are going to have to be guys that are willing to go up and down.
Is it Goat?
Yeah. Maybe he's like your 13th forward that is with the Marlies half the time.
Captain of the Marlies.
I don't know. You don't usually make your captain someone who's going up and down.
No, I'm just kidding. Yeah.
Remember last year we were talking about in the offseason how they were going to be 20-man roster all year, and they were going to be so close to the cap, and they might be down to 19 players at times, and it never happened because they had the injuries. So I'm not as fearful of, I don't know if fearful is the right word, I wouldn't be as reluctant to go in with hardly any cap space and like a 20-man roster.
Well, that ties into what you wrote about this week, and that was whether they can afford to do Pietrangelo. You do that, and you're probably looking at kind of scenario, right?
Yeah, like there were scenarios where they had like, you know, 40 grand left or whatever. But if they get the pieces they want, I think that that's fine. I know that Dubas talked about having flexibility and going into the year with more cap space and how cap space will accrue over the year. And all that's well and good, but I think if they can get the players they want, that's more important than having cap space to accrue.
Well, and the tough part is, like, for planning purposes, it's really hard to say what anyone's going to cost.
Yeah.
Like, you can guess, I guess the chances are of a guy coming in more than you expect is probably low, but who knows? Like, who knows what TJ Brody is going to demand and get?
No, and that's why it's a really hard decision for Leafs management, because do you come out aggressively at the beginning of free agency and trade and like get the guys you want, or do you kind of like wait it out a little bit? Do you go in and do you have like $2 or $3 million sitting there and like, we're going to get the most interesting like guys who have to take a less smaller contract?
Well, as we talked about last week with like fantasy auctions, there's risk in both things, because you come out swinging, you get the guys you want, you probably pay a little bit more. You may not, like, you may end up paying less. Or you wait and maybe you get like some bargains, or maybe you get nothing.
Or maybe you get a bargain on a guy who's not really who you want.
Yes. And that's risky too. So
I think they could probably do that with like their fourth line positions. Like I've heard Engvall's name out there, and it makes sense because Engvall's probably only a fourth liner. Mm-hmm. That contract does not look great given the flat cap. Like, that got signed before we knew it was going to be a flat cap. The Leafs don't really want to pay their fourth liners 1.25. I mean, it doesn't sound like a lot of money, but if you do the math, it's over $500,000.
Well, the extra minimum is 750 or seven.
Seven next year.
So that's a lot.
Yeah.
That's like almost double the minimum for a guy who's going to play 10 minutes.
Yeah. Like, and I'm an Engvall fan, but I can see why they potentially would move him. And again, it's about changing the mix and getting some a little bit more probably physicality and a little bit more strong defensive play into the bottom six. And to put guys there that can move up, and they really got to find, we've talked about this in the past, but they got to find wingers that can play in the top six.
Okay, so we are going to talk about that because I wrote about some
of
the,
what we're talking
the
about.
10. Yeah, that's because I'm in charge. I wrote about like 10 guys that I think that they should go after in free agency. But first I want to talk about the goaltending. You wrote about Robin Lehner, Frederik Andersen. You and I'm recalling you, both wrote like right after the season that it's time like to start looking at something else. You can't keep running
the Andersen
back.
Bandwagon all year.
You were actually ahead of it during the pause, but I think right as I saw that series going along, it was very clear, like, this guy is what he is. And I'm not sure he's going to be the guy who can kind of take you deep into the playoffs. I guess the first place I want to start is, what does someone like Frederik Andersen, one more year, $5 million, not very much in salary, in actual money.
$1 million.
But coming off, like, a bad year, what does that guy get you in trade? Like, I can't imagine you're getting much more than, like, draft pick.
Well, it's interesting that St. Louis got a third round pick for Jake Allen, who makes $4.3 million and does not have a lower salary. So,
and is a backup.
That trade yesterday was like, wow, that's all. Like, I thought that St. Louis was going to have to retain salary on Allen. I thought maybe they're going to have to buy him out, but he had such a good year that I don't think that was a great trade by Montreal because there's so many goalies available.
No, it's bizarre.
A backup that makes $4.3 million and you give up a.
Oh, so you're paying your two goalies like $14 million, $15 million?
But I will say this. Other teams like Andersen. Like, other teams look at him as, like, giving some stability to a team. Like, you got to think if you're a... The Leafs have been fortunate and they haven't had, like, a starting goalie who's a basket case. Like, if you... Like, there are a lot of teams around the league that have really struggled with goaltending for years.
Well, just think of them. Calgary,
yeah,
Edmonton.
Like, I think Calgary really wanted Andersen 4 years ago when the Leafs got him, and their offering was just a little bit less, and they were in the West, and Anaheim didn't want to trade him. Like, I wonder if Calgary's like, let's trade Rittich or whatever, or make him the backup, and like, I think there are going to be teams that like Andersen. Now, are you going to get like a crazy good asset? I was talking, one team said they think that the Andersen will go for cap space and a useful but cheap asset, if that makes sense.
So like a third liner who makes...
Maybe.
Yeah.
That would probably be ideal. Someone that can play on but your
see,
team.
See, that's the interesting part about the idea of trading Andersen is what you have is like there's some upside in what you have. Like, granted, the playoff stuff has not been good. There's no getting around that. But like, it is comforting for a team to know that you can just start this guy 50, 60 times, and he's just going to be pretty good. Like, this year wasn't great, but he's probably going to be 915, 917, 918.
There's probably 6 or 7 teams around the league that would love to have what Andersen has given the Leafs the last 4 years. Yeah. Yeah. Well, that Elliot Friedman reported that Carolina's interested in Andersen.
It's just like when you don't have that guy, it's like you're chasing it. And that's one of the things I think the Leafs have to be careful of, and you brought this up in your piece, is you can trade him, and then if you don't get the right guy, you're just going to be, you could potentially find yourself in a situation like all those other teams where you have two guys, you don't really love either one, and you're just kind of uncertain what you're going to get. You don't know who's going to be your starter in the playoffs. Like, that's where someone like Lehner comes in, right? Because he is not that. You can count on that guy being your 50 starts, 60 starts, good.
Yeah. I mean, I'm reluctant to say that just because can you count on any goalie? Like, there's so many goalies that have 3 years.
True.
And like, look at the goalies on my list that are like now like bargain bin gambles. It's like Matt Murray, Braden Holtby. I think Corey Crawford, going through this exercise, actually gave me a new respect for Corey Crawford because he's 35, I believe. He's going to be 36 in December, and he's still good.
Mm-hmm. And five-on-five save numbers are great.
His, like, advanced stats, goaltending-wise, are really good. They're better than Andersen. Like, yeah. Corey Crawford came up near the top of the NHL.
Right.
Which I was like, oh, that's interesting. And, he wants to stay in Chicago, and they don't have a starter right now, and, like, they'll probably figure something out. But just going through this exercise, I had 12 different options for the Leafs. One of them is including Andersen coming back. And going through all the... It's just... You got to be careful committing to a goalie.
Well, because like I saw your list. The only guy you can definitively, and not even like definitively, you can say like we're getting a better goalie is Leonard, and everything else is kind of like maybe.
I think is probably better is Darcy Kemper in Arizona.
He had two really good years the last couple years. He was, wasn't he like a Vezina finalist 2 years ago? Or close, like he had like a 930 save percentage, close. Something like that.
Among the 12 goalies on my list, he was the top in terms of, you know, some of the advantage. And Anderson was kind of in the middle. You know, some of the other ones I had ahead of Anderson were, just statistically, Kemper, Crawford, Khudobin, Lehner, Georgiev were the ones that...
Okay, and so I can pick apart. Georgie's been a backup.
Well, he's only played 77 games.
Right, and Khudobin's been like a part-time starter forever. What's interesting about Khudobin's career is he's like a really late bloomer. Like you look at his early years, they're not very good. And then these last few years, he's been like a two, like a number two.
He had some years as a backup in like Boston and stuff, and in the AHL.
That's recent.
That were really good. And well, some of the European guys play overseas and don't get like discovered. Like, was Khudobin even drafted?
I don't know, but he's been here a while. He's been like in the NHL longer than you think.
He was in Minnesota. He's a guy that I've always thought should get a chance as a number one that just has never happened. Like, he's been one of those, and he's never made big money. And the appeal with someone like Khudobin is that he would be a tandem goalie with Campbell, and he's going to cost less than, although with what he's doing in the playoffs this year, I mean.
Maybe he won't cost less.
Yeah. Well, he probably will cost less, but it might not be enough less that it like is that appealing. You brought up his stats here. Like, I remember when he was in Minnesota, like, look, he had like, well, he didn't play much for Minnesota.
But look at his numbers.
I remember
in Carolina,
this year, like, so Boston, he's 26. He has the 920 save percentage. He only played 14 games, but I think his numbers in the minors were really good. And that's when Carolina's like, oh, let's give this guy a shot. One good year, one poor year. He's bounced around a lot. Like, but.
Well, and so that's the thing. Like, so if he costs you 3.5 and he is, how old is he? 34?
He's old.
So he's 34. Like you're gambling a little bit, and that's something like you and I have been like trading messages about this.
But you're gambling if you keep Anderson too.
Yes, 100%.
I think you like this is what I think with Anderson. You know what he is. He is going to give you that again.
Yeah.
He's going to be league average starter, maybe a little bit better. He's going to be a little bit inconsistent during the season, and in the playoffs,
he's going to scare you.
You're not going to be 100% confident, and I think that confidence has been shaken with Anderson. To the point that they're looking at very seriously at this. And Chris Johnston at Sportsnet reported that Anderson himself doesn't really seem to, his camp doesn't think he's going to be back. So that's, and I think if you introduce this into the Toronto market, this idea that a guy's going to be, like, can you imagine him coming back now? Like, he's going to be asked about it over and over and over and over again. Yep. I don't know how healthy it would be to bring him back.
It's just the question of like who are you replacing him with. So one of the names that's been out there is Matt Murray, who's I think pretty good last year. We talked about this before, and this year struggled. Obviously, has the two cups, needs a new contract. One thing I worry about a little bit with Kyle Dubas that we've seen, he has a tendency to go with people he knows, and that can be a good thing. But I think it also can be a drawback just to rely on figures that have been in your orbit before that you're comfortable with. And I think there is risk in Murray that way.
I think he knows that's a criticism that's out there, though.
And it's fair criticism, isn't it?
Like, yeah. Well, Dubas gave that talk at Sloan. What year was that? That was 2015.
I think it was 2015, yeah.
2015, I was there, and he gave his talk, and a lot of it was about cognitive biases, and it was all about...
He shouted you out.
Did he?
One of your tweets.
I don't know. That's funny. I was at Sloan. I was on the hockey panel, and then there was like this little side room. They have it at MIT. They have it at the Boston Convention Center, and MIT runs the whole thing. It's amazing. I recommend that. It's expensive, but I recommend people go if you're into analytics and stuff like that. Because I saw Kirk, what's his name?
Goldsberry
present on the NBA stuff.
He's
like
awesome.
What ended up in his book, Sprawl Ball. He presented on that 5 years ago. And seeing that person, I was like, holy shit. Like, I was like, the NBA is way ahead of what we're doing on hockey. Anyway, so Dubas presented in like a little side room down the hall. And it reminded me of like a psychology lecture I had in undergrad. But it was about bias. And one of the biases can be, the name of it's not coming to me. It's not recency bias, but it's like people in your orbit bias, almost like people that you know that you're biased towards because you have a strong sense of who they are and you like them as a person. And I don't know how serious they are about Matt Murray. The one name that's not on my list that I would like to throw out as just to be an agent of chaos is Markstrom in Vancouver. And that it sounds like those talks are like not... When I wrote this piece, I was thinking that Markstrom for sure was going to go back to Vancouver. But it doesn't sound like that that's a guarantee. And I wonder if he's available. And if he's not too expensive, I wonder if he could potentially be an option.
Doesn't he want, like, what... Couldn't they not agree on like $6 million or something on a long-term deal?
But I don't think Vancouver wants to pay that. I mean, there's some debate over this. Apparently the latest offer to Markstrom from Vancouver was short-term and like more like four something. That's what I heard.
Okay. So then another question, is he actually an upgrade from Anderson? He's basically the same age.
I think he's
918 save percentage the year before, 912, 910.
I'm not saying this is like, I'm not a Markstrom believer. I'm not super, super high on him. I just could see him being an option for the Leafs, if that makes sense. I'm not saying that's what they should do. I'm just saying that he might be one of the number one goalie options that I didn't have in my piece.
Yeah. Well, I think you didn't have him in your piece probably because you would think he's going to stay in Vancouver and he's going to be expensive.
I thought he was, but you know, Demko comes in and plays that amazing game. The thing that everyone has to keep in mind, I had some people in the comments on my piece saying, why is Arizona going to make Kemper available? Why is
I was going to send you that. Why wouldn't... I thought it would be Ranta who would be available, not Kemper. But I guess it's one or the other. Like, you're not going to pay $9 million for two goalies.
So, like, I had fans like saying, why would any of these teams trade these goalies? The expansion draft. People are going to trade goalies because of the expansion draft. If you're a team that has two relatively established goalies that could both potentially be number ones, it does not make sense to hang on to them. It just doesn't. The Rangers are probably... Well, I don't know if Georgiev would be eligible for the expansion draft or not. Probably, I guess he probably would. But like, there are going to be good goalies available in the expansion draft. And if you're Arizona, and Arizona is apparently thinking about rebuilding if they don't get to keep Taylor Hall, which don't think they're going to be able to...
What a disaster.
There's going to be a lot of teams, Jonas, that are going to have a serious financial issues next year. Like, the Penguins are talking about they're not going to be a cap team. Like, it's pretty remarkable that I think financially that you could see some teams really pull back in what they spend, which is good for the Leafs.
Well, there's opportunity, right?
I mean, if normally in the NHL you get like 20 of the 31 teams spend to the cap, I think it could probably be more like 15 this year.
All right, let's take a quick break and then we will be back to talk about UFA targets potentially, and we can discuss one of those guys in more in depth, Robin Lehner.
This is the Athletic Football Show.
I think every football season's a big challenge in one way or another.
Introducing the Athletic Football Show, an all-new podcast with me, Robert Mays, and a team of world-class NFL writers and analysts. We'll feature expert guests and our plugged-in beat writers from around the league.
What Patrick Mahomes did in the last 9 minutes is just absurd.
You can subscribe now to the Athletic Football Show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or the podcast provider of your choice. And stay with us all season long as the Athletic brings you what matters most in today's NFL.
All right, so we touched on him a little bit. What would you be willing to pay Robin Lehner on a long-term deal?
I think something in the ballpark of what Anderson makes.
So like 5x4 or something?
Yeah, like 4 years at $5 million I would be fine with. And if the bidding for Lehner, like, it sounds like to me Vegas really wants to keep him and that's why they acquired him. And
but what's the but there? I think Marc-Andre Fleury signed for like 3 more years at like
Two more years at $7 million. Yeah, well, I think.
Who's taking that?
I think you got to retain some of it, or maybe you make some sort of creative trade, or
it's definitely.
I know it's that doesn't mean that Vegas doesn't want to keep Lehner though.
No, it just means like good luck.
And if Montreal's paying their goalies $15 million, can't Vegas pay their goalies $12 million?
You could. You can do anything you want. Is that smart?
There's going to be offers for Lehner. There's going to be teams that are interested in him. If I'm the Leafs, I'm interested, but I'm not interested at. I'm not going to put everything into that basket. And that's why, like, I think that the decision to trade Anderson, they could be kicking tires on it and everything right now, but they need another goalie. They need to know, like...
And you can't really do one without knowing what the
other's gonna be. Think I would go into free agency and try and sign the guy I want, whether it's Lehner or Markstrom or Crawford or whatever, or make a trade. And then I, like, look at moving Anderson after that. And that
the tough part is then that
puts you in a harder position.
Your leverage.
puts you in a harder position. But I like, it's the same thing as when you're buying and selling a house. It's like, do you want to go buy the house you want before you've sold your house? And that puts you in a tough position, because then you, either way, it's difficult.
The thing that I have undervalued is, and I sent this to you because it just came up when we were talking about it, is you're kind of betting your job a little bit if you're Kyle Dubas on like one of these guys.
He's betting his job on whatever he decides.
Yeah.
Like this is such a, going to be such an important year for the front office to rebound from what happened this year. You know, it's, if they stay with Anderson and he flops, then they bet on that. And they're betting a lot on Campbell. Like they seem to think Campbell can play 30 plus games. They're betting a lot on trying to get who they want in free agency or in trade.
All right. Well, so nice segue. I appreciate that. I looked at free agency and like went through as many candidates as I possibly could. Number one, free agency is not that fun. Like the names that are out there are just not that great.
I laughed at the comments on your piece because people were like, oh, like they were complaining or whatever. It's like, it's not your fault that free agency isn't that good. People were like, why would the Leafs want these bums and whatever? And it's like, who are they supposed to get? They can't go sign Seth Jones. Like he's not available. Yeah, like people were angry at you and like voting your piece down and whatever. And I was like, well, like name. Sometimes fans are just so emotional and like they're frustrated with the Leafs roster and like they like want that magic bullet. They want like Victor Hedman to be at the top of your list. And it's like he doesn't exist. I mean, there's Pietrangelo. I mean, that's we can talk more about Pietrangelo if you want. But like there's. The fact that even he's potentially available and there are some good goalies available and like there's a couple interesting pieces in free agency, but there's not a lot. Like other than Taylor Hall, like who's an interesting forward, and Dodonov?
Matthias Janmark.
Hoffman.
Like those guys are all fine. They're good players. It's just very funny, like compared to like NBA free agency, where like the best players in the league, and obviously it's contract lengths. But
I wonder if that'll happen more often in the NHL, like with like the how high escrow is and all the financial uncertainty. You could see guys like Hall and probably not Pietrangelo, but you could see some of these guys take like a 2-year deal and they'll be right back into free agency again in 2 years.
It's risky though, right?
Some agents are advising it though, because like the cap is so flat right now, escrow is so high. Do you want to take your big money years in free agency right now? The risk is you get hurt or you have a bad year or whatever, but if you bet on yourself, it could pay off big time in your next contract.
But then like you don't know that the cap's going to be any higher 2 years from now.
It'll probably be a little bit higher. Like the way they structured the agreement, it looks like as soon as there are fans in the building, it will slowly go up.
To what?
It'll slowly go up.
Like I mean, 83, 85?
Yeah, over time. No, it's not going to skyrocket.
Yeah, so ever. Like your chances of getting, you're not like how much better a deal
would
are you
they
getting
sign a
2 years?
CBA, it's never going to skyrocket in the CBA. And if there aren't fans in the building next year, it's probably never going to go up that much. But what will happen is escrow is going down. That's guaranteed. Like it's going to go from 20% down to 6% over time. So if you're a free agent, you're like, do I want to sign my big ticket right now for that money?
Okay, well, so let's talk about Pietrangelo. Obviously, there is a chance that he just stays in St. Louis. Most players stay, like most players of his caliber stay. Like Tavares is the exception.
I think he wants to be there.
Yeah.
That one's weird that it's still going, to be honest.
Well, they've done some things to insure against it, which I would say are not smart.
Well, the Falk contract looks terrible.
Disaster.
They gave up a lot for him, and then they gave him tons of money, and I don't really understand. I think they gave up a lot for him, if I remember that trade accurately.
Well, they gave him a 7-year deal, 6.5 ticket.
And then he played on their third pair.
Yeah. Doug Armstrong's done some interesting things. Doug Armstrong's done some really good things.
He's a good GM.
Yeah, it's done just, some really good things.
You know, even the best GMs make mistakes. And I think that the Falk thing was, I think what they were trying to do is give themselves more leverage against Pietrangelo, where like it seemed like his camp had all the leverage. We're like, what are you going to do? You got no defense. Like you have to sign us.
Yeah, but then like you actually ruin your leverage, because now Pietrangelo's like, you're giving 6.5 to this dude.
Yeah.
I'm
That's
like,
what I had in my piece. Trophy That's finalist. What I had in my piece, right? It's like, so St. Louis is offering somewhere around 8. Someone today told me 8.25 by 8 years. Like that's pretty fair. I think they look at Doughty and Carlson getting 11, and
Yossi got 9.
Yossi got 9.06 or whatever, and like Pietrangelo can argue that he's in that class of defenseman.
I think he can argue that he's in Yossi's territory. Like everything is pretty similar.
Yeah.
age is similar.
Well, in the tax situation in Nashville is much more favorable than St. Louis. Mm. As far as I know, the Missouri tax code. So like St. Louis is trying to guard against paying Petrangelo more than they want to, but then they give Falk way too much money and it ends up being, what's that expression? It's like they're outsmarting themselves, but like, you know, you're like trying to play checkers instead of chess and then you end up, or chess instead of check. Anyway, I'm.
Well, so let me draw you back in to the Leafs. If you're the Leafs, and you wrote about this, people can go check that out at The Athletic. Is it worth clearing the decks? You'd have to clear a lot of space to try and sign him. Now, Petrangelo is everything they need. The only like red flag is his age and the downside of clearing your roster.
He's 31 in December, right?
In January, okay. I believe. He's everything you need, except for the age. And the cost and what it's going to do to your roster. Like he is first pair, every situation will help you win a cup, will help balance, like everything that they've been looking for. You thought about it in writing it. Do you think it's worth it given the effects it has on the rest of your roster?
Honestly, I think you have to be willing to trade Nylander or Marner to make it really make sense. And then like getting other wingers to fill. It's hard. Like this is what the cap makes you do is it makes you, and this is the problem with, you know, you pay guys and it's like $1.5 million or $2 million too much. And then it makes it really difficult. So, because the piece that I wrote, I believe it was on our site on Wednesday morning, was just looking at, could you sign Petrangelo without trading any of your big forwards? And the answer is that you can, but you really have to gut all your depth. You really have to,
you become even more top heavy than you are.
You
now.
Become like,
it collapsing was, over the front of yourself.
It was something like 74% of their salary was in seven players. So like you can win in the NBA with like salary structure like that. No one's done it in the NHL. It would be like Dubas doubling down on giving fewer players more money kind of thing. If you give Petrangelo, I had him at 8.5.
Well, and you had, I think the goalie, this hypothetical goalie was like 3.2. And your fourth line is just like cheap guys in free agency.
Yeah. And you lose, and your third line gets weaker. Someone like Barabanov would have to potentially play in the third line, and we have no idea what Barabanov is. Like, I don't know if Barabanov is the next Miro Altonen, or I don't know if he's a Mikheyev. Like, it's hard to say. Some people really seem to like him, but it's not like he has huge offensive numbers.
No.
I kind of think he's a fourth line guy.
In that scenario that you had, you trade Anderson, you trade Janssen.
Engvall. And I kept Kerfoot, I think.
But then your defense is Riley Petrangelo, Muzzin Petrangelo, whatever you want. Muzzin, Hall, Dermott.
I guess maybe you could Sandin. Move Hall and free up a little bit more, because if you get Petrangelo, he's going to play 30 minutes on your right side and maybe.
Yeah.
Like they're going to have to be looking at like, is this guy making 1.8 too much? Or like, I would not want to be Dermott or Mikheyev going into those free agent negotiations because they got no money to give those guys.
Here's what I would, where I think I am on this. If I was confident that for the next 3 or 4 years, Petrangelo is going to remain, maybe not like exactly where he's been, but pretty close.
He'll be good. What was the age? We didn't get the age.
He's going to be 31 in January.
So like that's pretty old.
So that's the thing.
I was surprised when I wrote, because I wrote about Petrangelo during the season and Dom did like some age projections, how good he thought he was going to be for a long time.
Well, so the guy I've been
thinking of. Chara's 43, man.
Well, yes. And the guy I've been thinking of, they're not the same player at all. But like Weber's still good. And Weber's like, I think Weber's either 36 or 30, going to be 37.
Yeah.
Like maybe there's a chance that for 5 years, he's still going to be pretty damn good. And the problem, like, or the benefit of that is, you only have Austin Matthews and William Neal under a contract for 4 more years. Yeah. Like, so if he's just pretty good to really good for the next 4 years and you can win a cup, I think you really have to think about it. Even if like the depth of your roster is sunk, because you can always do stuff. Like you can always trade stuff, retain salary. Like it would be hard.
If the cap went up a little bit more, it would be a lot easier.
Yeah.
Or if you didn't pay like a lot of their RFA contracts, like even if you look at like some of the depth guys, like it, like it, in the end, it seems like fans get mad when I say this, but it seems like they paid Kerfoot probably too much. They probably paid Janssen too much. They probably paid Kapanen too much. They probably paid Engvall too much. They probably paid, you can go down the list. Like it's, but they were operating in an environment where they thought the cap was going to keep going up $3 or $4 million a year. They were trying to sign these guys ahead of time so that they would potentially
be undervalued.
Yeah. And not necessarily in the first year of the deal, but like in like towards the back end of the deal and trying to buy some UFA years and things like that. And it with the way that everything's gone with the virus and everything, it seems like it backfired on them a little bit where they've got a bunch of guys that are not underpaid anymore. And they need those little scraps of extra money if they want to sign a big player like this. You know what I would do, Jonas, if they do decide to do it, is you just give it 1 year. And if you're like, we're too top heavy, then you move one of the wingers next summer.
Yeah.
That's what you would do.
Yeah. Because it would be really, really easy to trade Nylander or Marner. Those are really only two because Tavares has the no move and Matthews is Matthews. I would look at it. The question, like a big question is, would he even want to come to Toronto? He's from here. But we've seen generally guys don't want to come here.
I think a bigger question is like, does his American wife, who's I believe from St. Louis, want to come here?
Yeah.
I don't think the Marlowe family liked it here that much. It sounds like part of like why he asked out was that it just wasn't like, you know, four kids and they're from California. Like,
yeah.
And like through a Toronto winter and everything. And I believe his wife's from California. Like that's a big adjustment.
Yeah.
And a lot of, gotta be careful how I phrase this. It seems that a lot of the American players, the families don't want to move to Canada. Like it's a culture shock, which I mean, you and I think
things are going great in the States.
You and I think that's misguided, but you know, it's what you know and what you're comfortable with. It was culture shock for me moving from small town Western Canada to Toronto. I mean, I've been here 17 years and it's still an adjustment and I still think, oh, it would be nice to go back.
Well, and let's be honest, like you're Pietrangelo, you've played your career in St. Louis. Jeremy Rutherford's like the only reporter and like maybe a couple others. You're just like playing kind of in obscurity. Like it's not bad. The pressure is lower.
The players love St. Louis. I know some of the alumni guys there and like the alumni association's strong. There's a lot of guys that have retired there.
Good team. Like
I don't know the city very well, like, but apparently there's like really nice suburbs and stuff like that that they like to live in. And
like here you're coming to like tons of scrutiny. Like I wonder like if you gave John Tavares like truth serum and said like, would you do it the same again? I think he would. But I'm sure he would think about it.
I don't think the scrutiny is bothering Tavares. If anything, like, I think the fan support has, like, he's liked it.
But it's different, right? It's something to adjust to, I think, for sure. And something, like, lots of guys don't want.
The problem for Tavares is going to be the weight of that contract with the team having so many cap issues and, like the...
Well, what especially they're if the want, decline is sharp, which it might be.
What they're going to want from him is going to be... He's going to have to be one of the best players in the NHL on that contract every year, especially with the flat cap. Like, he didn't know the cap was going to be flat. Like, you sign that $11 million, you think, well, the cap will keep going up, and that $11 million will look better every year. And
but even now, like, when the cap, like, the for this year, he produced at, like, a 30-something goal, 75, 70-something point pace. It's not good enough for someone who has an $11 million cap hit. Well, like, that's a really good year for most players.
How much production did he have in the playoffs? I mean, there were some playoff games I thought he looked really good, and there were other ones where he wasn't 11.
Great playoffs. No, he didn't. Like that, they. Sheldon Keefe.
Do you think that's a speed thing, or do you think that's?
I think speed is like going
because
to be
it's
a
never
going to
be effort with Tavares.
No,
never. Like he's literally puts. You can he puts like that's why he's got that goofy backpack all the time. He's like he's literally doing
he's
everything.
All in. He's all in.
He's literally doing everything he possibly can to get out of his body and.
I've told you, I think he's going to be a winger at some point.
Yeah.
But so some other interesting names that made my list, my sparkling list. TJ Brody was number one, just because fit-wise, he makes sense. The only problems I have with TJ Brody is, A, obviously you don't know how much he's going to cost. His
health,
age is health, age, and decline. But for what they need him for, to be what he'd be a second pair guy, basically. I think it's okay. I don't think it's like the sexiest thing. I think it's fine.
The fact that he's one of the best options in free agency is why I think trade is going to be where they find their defensemen.
Yeah. Well, we'll get into that in a sec because I've been going through the teams and there's more candidates in trade. Chris Tanev feels too risky to me. Like, this is like the fourth time in his career he's played 60
games. I kind of think these guys like Hamonic, Brody, Tanev are going to be kind of like the second options if they can't find the trade they want to make.
Yeah.
I bet you they'd use that. If I had to guess, if we're using, sorry, I'm getting us off topic here a little bit, but
it's okay.
If I had to guess what they try and do, it's like you take that first round pick you got in the Kapanen deal and package it with like, just, I'm just guessing, package it with Dermott and like a prospect or something and like try and deal with a rebuilding team and get a defenseman that you think is better than one of those guys in free agency. Mm-hmm. Now, what you like about free agency is you don't have to give up anything.
Yes. That's attractive.
That's what's great about Brody and
Tanev. Well, and if someone but like
you
Tanev...
You might have to pay them more than you want.
Well, so that's the question. Like, if someone like Tanev looks around and teams are like, we don't have money to pay you. Also, we don't really trust that you're going to stay healthy. A team like Toronto could just be like, okay, we'll give you two for a year.
He's going to get more than that.
Okay, so then thanks.
Yeah, but if you can't say thanks to everybody because you need somebody. It's the same with the goalie thing, right?
You can't just throw money at a guy just because.
Do you think there's any chance they come back with the defenseman they've got right now?
Yeah. As you have, I think, pointed out in like one of your cap-friendly projections, they could do that right now. Like, they don't have to sign anybody. They could just come back and they'd have like Riley Dermott, Muzzinhall, Sandin Lehtonen. Done. That's your defense. And then you could look in season for a team that's struggling and try to like pounce. Like, that's not impossible. It just feels like, given the pressure that's on Kyle Dubas, that's a big risk.
I guess they could do that, and you go into the season with 2 million cap space, and when you get to the deadline, you're going to have that 2 million grows over the course of the season. It could be 7 million, and then you can bring in like a really big name defenseman, you know, mid-season.
Which is what they did with Jake Muzzin.
With Muzzin, yeah. So that's possible. I guess that's what you have to do. If you can't find the trade or the free agent that you like, maybe you go into free agency with a bunch of these guys like Brody and that, and you offer,
you have a price contract, and you say like, this is our price. And if you don't like
short term,
if you don't like it, you can get the fuck out. Did you ever watch Delirious?
No.
Oh.
Is it a movie?
It's Eddie Murphy, 1983 stand up. Okay. It's unbelievable.
I have seen some of that. Yeah.
It's the best. So a couple other names I wanted to bring up that were interesting to me. Jesper Fast is the kind of guy you were talking about before, a winger who can play in your top six. He spent most
good
of this year.
Good defensively.
Good defensively. He spent most of this year with Panarin.
Yeah.
Really good defensively. And like, if you were replacing Kapanen with someone like that, you're not...
And maybe
like,
you
focus all the time on the defense, but if you get a better defensive forward, you're going to be better defensively, right, theoretically.
Right. And maybe you only have to pay him $2 million instead of 3.2 or
yes.
3.4 for
Janssen. And so suddenly, like, you've upgraded your winger, but you're paying less.
I think that's like someone like Rodriguez, too. Like, if they can somehow get him in at $1 million or something like that, like, they might want to get a bunch of these guys that they feel like have played with good players in the past and looked pretty good. It's the Pittsburgh model where they need at least like one of the wingers with Matthews and Tavares to make $2 million or less.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, so a couple other names, and then we'll briefly touch on some trade guys. Corey Perry, if he's willing to play for really cheap, I like the idea of... I think we should do a whole podcast on this, but the idea of adding a different type of personality and player to your team. And he's obviously at the end of his career, but like, I think he can bring that. Joe Thornton, you would be gambling that he has enough left to be on your third line, but I think
fourth line, right?
I don't know. He played third line this year.
On one of the worst teams in the NHL.
Yeah, but like the year before that, like his numbers are pretty good and like he's playing a lot. He'd play on your power.
I'm pretty sure
play.
Joe Thornton's older than I am, so
he's 41.
That's a bad sign.
41. Yeah.
If you're older than me, you're almost
you're really gambling.
You're done.
You're gambling. But like maybe he comes cheap.
The problem again, I think, with some of these guys is going to be the flexibility factor, where the Leafs really need to have some of these guys that, like, if they're not able to carry any extra forwards, those guys aren't going to yo-yo down to the minors and back. Like, I think that's probably why Spezza's not re-signed yet too, is that they can't have like three of those guys that can't go to the minors. They're going to need some guys that can bounce around a little bit.
Well, and as we've talked about, you need guys who can play center and wing. Like, you need guys who can slide around. Obviously, there is a real question of whether Joe Thornton can be a third line center at 41? Probably not. Okay, so let's briefly talk about some of the guys that I've come up with in scouring the league.
Give me like your five most intriguing options that you see in trades that you think, this is the key, that you think the other team might be willing to trade.
That's a very important underlooked part of this.
Well, there's lots of right defensemen.
But
there.
That's what happens to, like, Seth Jones. But, like, why would Columbus trade Seth Jones? No reason. So here's a good name, Jonas Brodin. So Jonas Brodin is a left shot, plays a right, statistically is like off the charts defensively, like unbelievable.
Yep.
You could put him with Riley. You could put him with Muzzin.
Was he got 2 years left on his
deal? He has 1 year left.
Four something?
I think it's five. I'd have to double check.
I think he's like 4'6" or something like that.
I think that's right. He would be a good one-term or one-year solution. I think he's someone you could potentially sign longer.
Well, you got it. Like, if you're trading something for a guy like that, you got to re-sign him. Like,
yeah, I think
you start talking extension right away.
And I think that makes sense. He is 27.
Well, he's 4.16.
Yeah, so it's like a really good number.
Yeah.
For what he is. And I think, like, long term, he's 27.
He just turned 27, so he's young.
Yeah, so maybe he is like a longer term replacement for Morgan Riley.
I don't have a good sense of what we could have Russo on to explain. I don't have a good sense of what Minnesota's going to try and do. Like, it's like they have a young defenseman coming that they're like, this is the answer for us.
No, but they have Suter obviously locked up forever.
Spurgeon
they locked up forever. Dumba is still signed another 3 years. And this guy's a year from UFA, and they need help up front. Like, like Russo's written about it, they need a center. And
so maybe they would bring in a defenseman, you know, on like a smaller contract or something.
Yes. And trade Brodin to try to get some forward help. Now, they need a center, and I mean, they can talk themselves into Alex Kerfoot if they want. I'm not sure that that's it. But I think he makes a lot of sense for what he is, how versatile he is, how good he is. So he's one name. How does he strike you?
The question is just fit on the other side is what I wonder about. Like, Minnesota's got a lot of older guys. They got a new GM. I just wonder what they're going to try and do. That's a hard one. Like, I often like to think about some of these teams. Like, Bill Zito just got hired as the GM in Florida. And I was like thinking, like, how would you fix Florida? I'm doing a mailbag. I don't know if you saw on the site. I put out a call.
I was going to ask a question.
Go ahead. There's like 250 of them already, so I don't know how I'm going to deal with that. But we put out to all of our hockey subscribers, and you can go ask a question. I'm not going to be able to answer them all. There's too many. But some of the questions are like Sharks fans. And they're like, how would you fix the Sharks? And I'm like, oh my God. Like, look at all those.
I came up to that team in my
Look at their cap situation. What do they got? Like six guys who are 30 plus when
Burns is 35 and has five more years at $8 million.
Look at Vlasic
has, I think, six more years $7 million. He's 33.
Doesn't he make eight? Like, all these guys are like washed. And like, I'm not saying Burns isn't washed. He's still a good player, but less. And Carlson even like didn't look very good last year at $11 million.
Oh, yeah, I forgot Carlson. I got to add him.
What about Martin Jones makes, I think, six? And I think he has 3 years left. So I got to answer. That's going to be one of my mailbag questions. How do you fix the Sharks? And it's like, holy cow. I think one of the good things for the Leafs is that they don't have all this like bad money to these older guys.
Okay, let me give you another name. I mentioned him before, Colton Parayko. 2 more years left on his contract, $5.5 million per. Defensively, exactly what you want. Right shot, big, perfect compliment.
I love Riley.
But the question is what you just talked about. Why would St. Louis trade
him? Well, you know why they would trade him is if they get Pietrangelo re-signed, they're not going to be able to trade Falk. They're all right D.
Yeah.
They're going to need cap space.
Yep.
Tarasenko's hurt again. I think it's his third shoulder surgery.
But the counter to that is you're not going to just trade Parayko for cap space.
No. They're going to want, that's what I'm saying.
They're going to want Nylander.
They want a forward.
Yeah. So like even if it's not Nylander, you go to them and you're like, here, we'll give you the first round pick. We'll give you Dermott. We'll give you Johnsson. They're going to be like, thanks.
I don't think so. They're trying to win the cup. Like if they get Pietrangelo back. And the thing too, you got to think about too, is if they're trading Parayko, they're auctioning him around the league to like the highest bidder, right? Mm-hmm. Like is the highest bidder going to be a first and Dermott and whatever?
Probably not.
No. Like some team's going to give them a really good offensive player. So, and it's hard for the Leafs to look at like what they've got and
Okay, so let's go to the next name.
Do you trade Robertson
for that defenseman? Sure.
Like the, I don't know. Like I don't. St. Louis is going to want like a ready. It would have to be Nylander. I don't know if they want him or not.
Yeah. Or Marner, but they can't afford him.
I don't think Marner's getting traded.
Well, based on Kyle Dubas's vociferous defense. How about Dougie Hamilton? So Dougie Hamilton, the reasons that Carolina would trade him is they've locked up a lot of defensemen for a while. Slavin, Pesci, Gardner, and Brady Shea are all locked up for the foreseeable future. Dougie Hamilton's a year from unrestricted free agency where he is going to get paid. He is, I believe, 27. Is he 27?
I don't have that in front of me. I'm just looking at Carolina's cap situation.
I believe he's 27. He's from here. He is the superhero of analytics.
Jonas, he likes museums.
Yeah, he's too weird. That's a plus. I think Kyle Dubas will like that, that he's a bit weird.
We don't think he's weird. Other teams think he's
okay.
Weird. His weird hockey teammates think he's
the
weird.
The thing is, A, you'd have to figure out what you can give Carolina to make them want to trade him. And then B, like you have to decide if you're going to pay him. Because if you're trading for him, like you mentioned before, he's going to cost you $7.5-$8 million on a long-term deal.
Well, Carolina's got Edmondson, Vatanen, and Van Riemsdyk, who are all UFA. So it's not like they're... The question is, are they comfortable with Gardner or Hayden Fleury being in their top four? I'm missing Pesci because he was under injured reserve.
And he signed for 5 more years.
My mistake. Delete what I just said, everyone. So they've got Hamilton, Slavin, Shea, Gardner, and Pesci. So they've got a lot of defensemen. The talk was they were looking at trading Gardner last year.
Good luck. It's tough. Like, obviously, we like Jake Gardner, but he's got 3 more years at $4 million and did not have a great
year. He was on the third pair, yeah.
So, and obviously, he's another polarizing player across the league. So there would be, I think there is a case. Obviously, they need a goalie. Frederik Andersen for Dougie Hamilton is not getting it done.
No.
But is there more you can attach to make it enticing for Carolina? Maybe.
Just keep giving Carolina first-round picks.
Sure. I mean, if it was Freddie in a first-round pick, I'd...
My concern with Dougie Hamilton is what you were talking about. He's only got the 1 year left on his deal. He comes in, you got to get that extension done, and it's going to be... So Dougie Hamilton's not the $5.75 million defenseman. He's an 8.
Yeah, he's in the Petrangelo range. 7.5, 8. Yeah, and he's younger than Petrangelo.
Yeah.
And maybe as good.
I don't mind that potential trade target. It's hard because we're guessing what the trade would look like.
Mm-hmm. That's what we have to do.
What's Carolina's cap situation like?
Well, the thing with Carolina is, like, their owner, like, is he, for next year, if they're not going to be fans, is he going to be willing to spend as much as he might have? I don't know.
Yeah, they're $9 million under right now. But yeah, I could see them having a hard time committing to a big Dougie Hamilton contract.
Yeah.
Especially with the other good D that they've got. I mean, Slavin's got to be their main guy there.
Yep. And he's locked up.
And he's got a really good contract.
Well, so the other guy there is Pesci. Now, some of the underlying numbers for him this year don't look as good as they once did. He has 5 more years, just over $4 million. I think you could probably trade for him if you wanted to.
He has 4 more years.
Are you sure?
Yeah. I literally have it in front of me.
Huh.
I'm counting right now.
Okay. So that's a risky one.
I like Pesci. I mean, the talk before was that they seemed like they wanted too much for him. Carolina's a hard team to trade with because it's a smart front office. They have a lot of good people there. Wasn't it you that was saying that in baseball no one wants to trade with the Rays because they're so... I would be wary of trading
when teams are like trading for your guy. You're like, why do they want him? Maybe we should keep him.
What was the Falk trade? Do you remember off the top of your head? I just would be like, I would be scared of trading with... Not that I'm saying I wouldn't do it. Here, trade history. I went down the wrong rabbit hole. Edmondson, Bach, 7th round pick. I guess it depends if Bach is a good prospect or not. Because, I mean...
Well, they paid, I think, a 1st round pick for Brady Shea, who signed long term.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another... I think that's one of those guys that they targeted, obviously.
It kind of looks like they just didn't like Falk and wanted to move on from him, which
understandable.
I can understand.
Okay, so let me give you a few more names. So Adam Larson has been talked about. It makes some sense. I'm not sure, like, he's... I'm not, like, ecstatic about that one.
I think Adam Larson's, like, if you feel like you need another top four defenseman, and he's probably, like, 15th on your list of 20 guys that you like.
And the price is probably not going to be super high.
Only 1 year left on the deal. And he's someone you don't have to commit money or term to, which is nice, because then you have flexibility, and then, like, you can see how it goes and then go into the next year. Like, if you could trade a Johnson or something in a package or something for Larson, then the cap space, and then you could still go into the year with that extra cap space that we talked about, maybe a little bit, accrue more money and maybe add another defenseman during the year.
Yeah. And if it works, like, I think he's only 27. You can, he's not going to cost you.
Larson's pretty good defensively.
Yep.
He can move the puck. Okay. He's fine.
Okay. A couple more.
I wouldn't trade Taylor Hall for him.
I don't know. Aaron Ekblad, and
I'm gonna clip you saying it like that.
Another Panthers defenseman who is less on the radar is Mackenzie Weegar. That's more of like a gambling kind of thing. He's a restricted free agent this offseason. He played on their top pair with Ekblad. He's right shot. What about Ekblad though? We don't know what Bill Zito, like you mentioned, is gonna do. We don't know what demands will be on that team to change. I remember, I think Pierre said, was it Pierre?
That could be a team that doesn't spend to the cap.
Yeah. Yeah, but I think, like, I read somewhere or heard somewhere, maybe it was Elliot, that Joel Quenneville worked really hard to, like, build a relationship with Ekblad. He's won a cup with Duncan Keith. Like, he probably sees Ekblad as, like, his number one defenseman. But
is Ekblad obviously, 7.5 or 8 million?
7.5. Yep. He is 24.
Yep.
And he's signed for, like, 5 or 6 more years.
He hasn't 100%. He's good. I don't know if he hasn't 100% grown into that contract yet, in my opinion.
I think he's about worth close to that. Like, he plays a lot of minutes. The numbers underlying are good. I don't know. I think he makes a lot of sense because you are buying the stock rising.
And this isn't just us making stuff up, too, because, like, it's been rumored that he's potentially available for the piece that I just don't know what Florida would want. And they have a new GM. A smart GM from a good organization who's probably not going to be super easy to deal with. I don't know what they would want. I can't see them rebuilding with the way that that roster is set up.
No. And so what are you offering them that's enticing? They obviously have committed to their goalie.
They're down a bunch of forwards because Dadonov and Hoffman are both UFA and both... I don't know if they're going to be back.
So, like, is there a world where you'd trade Nylander for Ekblad? I'd think about that. That's another one I'd think about, given the age, given the contract. He's locked up. He's exactly what you need.
Nylander would look pretty good with Barkov.
Yeah.
What does the Panthers' D look like if they trade Ekblad?
Well, the problem is they've signed a lot of older guys, or they have a lot of older guys in the contract. Yandel, and
they've got Strawman there now.
Yeah, who signed for 2 more years. Like, they've made Mike Matheson is signed forever.
Bissick's UFA.
Keith Yandel signed until 2023. Like, they've, and so it's Mackenzie Weegar they're gonna have to pay to. Like, they're gonna have to do something.
I see.
It doesn't help when you're paying your 800-900 goalie $10 million.
Yeah, Weegar is an RFA. Yeah, it's interesting.
So,
Yandel's got that no move too. So,
and no, you don't want him. So they're interesting.
Yeah,
There are interesting options in trade. As you said, there are more interesting options in trade. Not surprisingly, some other names that kind of stuck out to me. Jeff Petrie is I think your favorite player.
Yeah.
Josh Manson has 2 more years. He had a better year this year. I think that's another okay.
I know, like, for sure. That's someone that the Leafs have looked at in the past.
Yeah, so that's like in your Larson range, except he's got the extra year, which is appealing. I mentioned David Savard at the trade deadline. Why would Columbus trade him? Exactly.
Although the only thing that with that is that I know Columbus really likes some of their depth defensemen. Like, they like Nudivara and... they like some of the guys they've got coming.
And Gavrikov is already playing big minutes.
Yeah, I mean, he's locked in the top four. But you need, I guess the question is Ryan Murray's health. Like, I know they like Ryan Murray. I know they've got a lot of defensemen there. They've got that Dean Kukin. They've got some pieces there. So maybe they feel comfortable enough in their depth on defense that they can trade a Savard.
And he's signed for 1 more year for around 4, I believe. So he'd be like a short-term solution. You're not signing him long-term. He's getting up there. But that's okay. Nick Jensen is a guy that Washington signed last year, I believe. Again, like, I don't think he's exactly what you need.
Well, why would Washington trade him?
Well, Washington's gonna do something. I don't know.
And so you try and get in the mindset of these other teams, and
definitely did.
Given that exercise you went through, I can see why the Leafs aren't getting the defenseman they want for Nylander, because there aren't a lot of fits for that kind of a trade around the league.
Well, and you can see why last summer they settled on Tyson Barry, because it's one thing that really sticks out. A, there's not a lot of righties. B, there's not a lot of righties who fit what you need and are under contracts that are appealing to you and are good enough for what you need. It's just really hard to find that player.
Yeah.
So, like, total, I think I have probably, 10, 12 guys. And there are varying cases on whether those teams will actually trade those
guys. I'm sure the front office is kicking tires on everybody. Yeah. That's probably why I'm hearing from other teams, because they're probably calling every other team. And
as they should. So.
No, that's their job. I mean, and I think they're very motivated. The Leafs front office is very motivated to have a better year, obviously. And not just like out of desperation, but to prove that some of their ideas and theories are like there's a lot of questioning in the market now whether they had everything all wrong.
Okay, well, so let's talk about that briefly. We've been going a while, so we should wrap up.
Well, you're going to be on vacation for a while, so let's talk about this. A marathon.
Because this is something that
we always get asked to go longer, right? Like, I was listening to the Dangle podcast when I was driving around the other day, and like their shows are like an hour and a half.
I like longer podcasts. I take them on runs and just listen to the whole thing.
I think we should push back to our producer and say we want to do an hour.
All right, well, so let's talk about
this. Let's just send him in a file that's like 3 hours long.
This is something that I've been thinking about a lot lately watching the playoffs. Obviously, right after the playoffs finished, and maybe even before, we started thinking that this team had gone too far in one direction. They're too slippery and small and not really, like, they miss the Polaks and the Kadrys and the Komarovs. And you see some of those guys are playing in the playoffs and, like, contributing. I wonder if there's going to be an impulse to go too far. That's what I've been thinking about. Like, if they look at, we need to get some of that. I do think they have undervalued that stuff. I think you and I have undervalued that stuff. I think we have looked a little too much at some of the underlying numbers and not realized sometimes that hockey in the playoffs is more than that. And like, there are intangibles in the playoffs, especially, that you have to factor in. And some of it is like just some of that old school hockey nonsense that
it doesn't necessarily have to be size though. Like if you look at I'm not saying you are. I want to have a caveat to what you're saying. I mean, it's, like, Boston's forwards are not huge.
Neither are Tampa's.
The Leafs, what they need is guys that push a little bit harder through some of the nonsense that they face. And not even just in the playoffs. Like, when they face teams like that during the regular season, there's not hard enough push sometimes. Like, no. they need a little bit higher give-a-shit meter. And
I've used the word, like, and it's like a word you would use in writing more than in daily conversation, but it's like bite. Like, someone who has some attitude. And you look at some of these, like Tampa comes to mind. Like you look at some of their third and fourth line guys.
Well, I love.
There's like bite. Like
I love the trades they made. I like
Coleman has bite.
Coleman is great. Goodrow.
Yeah.
Barclay Goodrow. I really like Yanni Gord. Like Yanni Gord's 5'9". Like it's not about being a beast that's going to knock everyone on their ass. Like Kyle Clifford did that. I mean, it didn't help them win the series. It's about, you want people that will go through a wall and get their face broken in and get back up and push again. And
right. When they encounter a wall, they're just not turning around and walking away. They're pushing through it. And that's what it feels like they need more of. The problem
is Sheldon Keefe seems to think he can get some more of that out of the team.
Well, he's probably thinking of Nylander. He's probably thinking of Marner.
I think he's thinking about everybody. Like,
yeah. But so, I also do think that's how you're built to some degree. Like, that's one of the Nylander questions. Like, is that going to change? Or is that just going to always be who Nylander is?
You know what I think you need is, I think even like on individual lines, you need some contributors who offer different elements. And like this is going to be a really dumb analogy, but I'm going to make it anyway. The NHL 20 video game that I play, I'm now in this like where I'm a GM, like building my team and whatever. And I find if I have like three similar forwards on the same line, it doesn't work. It's really because they all have the same skill set. Whereas I have Patrick Maroon on my team as like, you can like, you buy different players and whatever. It's called Hockey Ultimate Team. Mm-hmm. And you build your team and guys are all rated different things. I have like a really highly rated version of Patrick Maroon. And he's really annoying when you get the puck like in the neutral zone because he's slow and like that's not what he can do. But when you're in around the net, I just pass it to that guy and he like, no one can get the puck off of him and he bangs it in. And it's almost like you need... That's a dumb analogy because it's a video game and hockey's not a video game. But there are some like stylistic things that I think I'm learning or thinking about a little bit more as I play the game and build my own team. And like, you can't have a whole team of Alex Kerfoots. Maybe having one is okay if like his wingers are offering the other elements that you need. But maybe you're too easy to shut down if you're too similar and doing the same things, or I don't know.
No, I think that's all valid.
But I think the thing though, Jonas, about what we're talking about with like trading Engvall and Janssen, and I wouldn't worry about them going too far because I don't know how they're going to do that. They have most of their team locked in.
Well, you know how you do that is like instead of, I don't know, you sign Radko Gudas and put him on your second pair.
They're not going to do that. They're not going to do that.
Okay.
I think the danger is the hard part for them is going to be getting good players that allow them to change that stylistic element at the same time. It's going to be really hard. You can't turn over an entire team. And they're all, like, the core is going
to
be the
and
same.
And they don't need to.
Like, how many players are going to be the same when the season starts next year as this year? It's going to be like 15.
Yeah.
14 or 15. There's going to be a lot of the players, and like the fans that are angry at this team are going to be mad to hear that. But there's going to be a lot of players on the team that are the same. Even like a huge overhaul means it's going to be 13 or 14 players are the same. So it's hard to change the DNA of a team. I think what Tampa did is really smart. I mean, like,
well, and those guys were under contract too, is
for low numbers.
It wasn't just like rentals. They got guys who are,
they gave up a lot to get those guys. Like, I remember at the time it's like a first round pick for Barclay Goodrow, but it's like, if you're in a win now
and they have cap things going on.
Right.
So it's just like, who are those players? And those guys more feel like trade. Like Patrick Maroon will be a free agent.
I like Patrick Maroon. I'm just saying.
It's that kind of player. Yeah. No, he makes sense.
I have Sean Couturier on my team, and like, he's great, but he does like certain things really well. He needs like some speed on the wing and stuff like that. And
That's why even like I've started rethinking like Spezza, because Spezza was awesome last year for them, but he's very much in line with what they are. And like maybe on that fourth line, you need like kind of a pest, like a guy who's going to like be like that quote unquote shit disturber. You know what I mean? So it's just a question of like who those guys are, how many you bring in, how many do you think can change like the mold of your team? But so Gudas is like a good example, I guess, to go back to that idea. If you bring in Gudas, suddenly either Sandin or Dermott or Lehtinen is not playing.
That's the thing, is I would rather just bring in what I've got as opposed to, and instead of like pushing a young guy out of the way, like I would just go back with what they got than bring in a guy who's not that good.
Okay, but so here's the counter to that, is not you look that, in the playoffs. Yes. I think the playoffs is a really good reminder of, you always see teams that are generally older, more experienced. Like Tampa right now is playing like Zach Bogosian minutes, Luke Shen minutes. Braden Coburn was scratched.
Not that old. I mean, like there are younger teams.
No, yeah, but look at their defense. Like Alex Edler's at the end.
I know, but like on average, they're not that old.
No, but like they've brought in, like they've overpaid like guys like Roussel. But Roussel is like the kind of guy we're talking about.
Myers and a bunch of those guys. And
I guess the point is, like, I think what you see in the playoffs is there is a different level of something that you need that's different from the regular season, and what we have seen generally from this team is it's missing a little bit of that.
I mean, they were missing it during the regular season, though, too. They were shit during the regular season. Like, they did not. So, I don't know.
So the question is how you address that.
You've got the lineup in front of you, and I'm looking at it, and, like, you can see, like, if you look at the bottom six, like, there's not a lot of what you're talking about there.
No, there's not a lot of bite. Who's got bite? Clifford, but Clifford, I'm not sure.
He's not going to be back.
Well, and I don't know that he should be.
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Like, you need guys who can actually, like, contribute. And obviously, in the past, he had, but
I wonder if it's a matter of some of the analytics can't capture.
They can't.
All the
no,
value.
No, that's exactly it. Yes. That's
hockey's a, analytics that's exactly are not really that.
And that's, I think, the bigger point is, and if you build a team that is so analytically friendly, you're missing something.
Yeah, but there are players who have that are have good analytics.
Like 100%, but you are missing something if that's like your only, if your only philosophy for the types of players that you'll bring in. Like, you won't bring in someone who's a little bit
what
like...
you need to look for then, like, in terms of, there's got to be like data on like guys that are like good at takeaways, or I don't know, like there's got to be some, we probably just don't have the right inputs yet.
Maybe.
For like, or outputs for what we need to know.
You also just have to watch, right?
Like, well, yeah.
That's what's been running through my mind, is like how you, it's like a very, it's imperfect. Like, it's really hard to find like the line.
I just
line.
Hate giving into the crowd that's like, analytics don't work. And blah,
no, that's,
blah, blah.
But that's not what I'm saying.
It's kind of conceding a point to them, to it's someone, to someone.
You know what it is? It's conceding that there's a limit to it. And that if you go too far and just strictly look at those guys.
But what I'm saying, Jonas, is that maybe they need to look at different analytics. Like maybe there are other teams that are very analytical, like Colorado, and it's working really well.
Yeah.
Colorado didn't want Tyson Barrie, and they really wanted Nazem Kadri, and they didn't want Kerfoot.
But they also had Makar and Girard and like Ryan Graves.
But maybe they saw some things where they saw like Kadri was a massive upgrade over Kerfoot, where when you look at the analytics, like you put some of those charts next to
great
each other.
Great example, yeah.
And it's like,
well, and that's,
they look
and
similar.
And that's the limits of analytics, is like, it's very context-based. You and I were talking about this because I've been asking for your help. You can look at one player's analytics, but if you're not judging it in the context of his team and like where he plays and who he plays with and the situations, it can lie to you.
I remember when that trade happened. It was Canada Day. It was in BC. And I started getting, I was like, oh, that's really interesting. Okay. They get Barrie at half his salary. They get Kerfoot. Yeah, they trade Kadri, but like, it seems like they got a lot back. And then I started talking to other people, and like other teams not involved in the trade were like, we don't like this trade. And then like then they were saying that Colorado was like basically doing backflips in like their office that they made that trade. And I'm like, maybe this was a bad idea. If you read my column, I'm like very like kind of like, I don't know about this trade.
Well, and you can look, here's another point to that. If you look at some of the underlying numbers for Kadri this year, not as good, not great. That it, like the things we thought were maybe happening, like the decline, maybe happening. But in the playoffs, like it matters maybe a little less.
But you're still talking about the numbers that, like I'm talking about maybe Colorado's looking at different things and
for
saying
sure
he's not
are.
Declining and they like what he's doing.
Yeah.
Well,
sure.
They played Kadri with not very good players.
Yeah.
Maybe they see, like, do you know the strong link, weak link theory of, like, building a hockey team?
Oh.
Maybe they see Kadri as, like, a strong link, and, like, he can elevate lesser players, whereas mm-hmm.
Kerfoot can't. He can't.
No.
At this point. He it looks like he can fit around good players, which is helpful.
We should get into all this. There's like interesting like hockey theory happening online that.
Yeah, like I can. One of the things I was thinking about as you were talking is in baseball, lots of these like smart teams like Oakland, sometimes they have a guy who has a shitty on base percentage, but he hits a ton of home runs,
and that
outweighs it, right? And so like maybe there's something you've got to find to like balance it. So maybe like his possession isn't great or his expected goal is a little off, but like you dig in a little more and like there's something he does that isn't as quantifiable.
I know we got to wrap up, but let me throw this at you. The Leafs had the eighth best record in the league after Keefe took over. They were the highest scoring team in the NHL. They had the second best power play in the league. The Columbus series was very, very close, and you can argue the Leafs were the better team. Maybe they don't need a huge overhaul.
Weren't they like the fifth or the sixth best team under Babcock last year with the second best power play and almost pushed Boston without
Kadri?
Well,
no, last year they weren't that good of a team under Babcock because they finished with 100 points. That wouldn't, they were like 12th or something.
They were not.
They were not the fifth or sixth best team in the NHL last year.
Like points percentage? Yes, they were.
There's no chance they were the fifth or sixth best team in the NHL.
All right, well, look at this right now.
I will bet you the beer we're going to go drink right now that
okay.
They were not the fifth or sixth best team in the NHL.
Awesome. I like
you hit playoffs. You got to switch it to regular season.
Okay. What's that say? Tied for seventh points percentage?
You said the fifth or the sixth best team.
Okay, so seventh. Like, fuck off.
They're ninth.
No, 6-10. 6-10, 6-10.
They're tied for seventh with two other teams.
Yeah, and they have more regulation wins than both of those teams, so suck it. Thanks
they
for
still
the
weren't fifth or sixth. You said fifth or sixth.
Okay, so they're seventh. Jesus.
I win.
Yes. So their record was better than it was under Sheldon Keefe. So, like, what do you want? Like, so if you if, like, you can spin the numbers any way you want.
Didn't the Leafs have a better record than 6-10 under Keefe?
If you look at, okay, so like you want to go there. If you look at like the three previous seasons under Babcock, it's basically the same points percentage.
I know, but they were getting weaker though.
Okay, whatever. What point are you trying to make? What point? Where
well,
are
I'm
you
just
going
saying
with
that
this?
maybe we're going too far with this.
Yeah,
all this stuff is not working, and like they've got the analytics are wrong, and all this stuff.
Maybe
what they need is, Sheldon Keefe's points percentage was 6.28.
Right, and the 3 years previous under Babcock, I believe, was 6.25 or 4 years previous. So, whatever you want, but it's a valid point. Are they overreacting to 5 games after a 5 month layoff?
The question is, you got to make the right amount of change and the right changes and the.
The problem is, like as you pointed out,
any better goaltending this year too. Like I can't believe Michael Hutchinson in the playoffs.
That's unbelievable.
Dubas probably has like a hockey puck thrown through his TV after.
Well, watching him try to catch that puck that went past him was very deja vu. But there is a danger to overreacting. Like that was 5 games after a 5 month layoff. The problem with that idea is before all that crap happened, they were a very uninspiring team.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that long before the pause when they looked terrible on that California road trip.
I don't think you could call them a contender this last year, and that's scary when you got your guys in your prime.
Yeah,
because when they were playing those series with Boston, they were always building towards. You could make the legit case that if they weren't a contender, they were right there. And now it's kind of like I don't know.
Yeah, and so that's why you make change. And the question is how much and where and how and.
All right, Jonas is off for a little bit. When he gets back, it'll be. I believe it'll be your birthday at some point.
Yeah, and yours too.
Yeah, and mine. Yeah, we're both Libras, so that's kind of weird. Balance.
Balance, yeah. Well, I should mention this guy, like Jim Rutherford was on with Scott Burnside and Pierre LeBrun in the 2 Minute Advantage. He is like a reporter's dream. He just tells you everything he wants to do and who he's going to trade. And
we need a little bit more Jim Rutherford in the Leafs front office.
Kyle Dubas, if you're listening, please follow Jim Rutherford and not Lou Lamoriello. Just say everything.
Throw us a bone.
All right, so we will be back.
Throw me a freaking bone here.
Thank you for the Dr. Evil. So we'll be back very soon with another Leaf Report, hopefully with lots to talk about. So be safe, everyone, and thank you for listening.